Well, it's good to be with you again this morning and wishing you a happy new year. And trust that this will be a good year. We're looking forward to adding three members to our family this year. Our daughters are each having babies and our son is getting married. So we're going to be expanding this year, Lord willing. So that's what we have to look forward to. And God's continued blessing and just his grace upon us, which is really quite incredible. The year was 2008. 2008, the school, I teach at Providence Theological Seminary, and the school had given me a sabbatical, and a sabbatical means not a vacation, but you do something with it. And the sabbatical, I've been there now for my 23rd year, so I had a sabbatical before that. In that sabbatical, I studied and went back and forth to Chicago and was involved in doctoral studies there. But I was finished all that stuff, so I took this sabbatical and still wanted it. And I needed to tell the school, well, what are you going to do on your sabbatical that's going to help you in your teaching ministry and just that type of thing? So I said, well, I'm involved in this ministry, and I'd like to go to the countries of Ukraine, and as we worked it out later on, I went also to the country of Georgia to teach. I also had to teach even my sabbatical. I taught a couple of courses at the school. So it was 2008, and first of all, at the end of January, I went to teach a class at this conference that we had just outside of Kiev. And then at the end of the week, I went to the country of Georgia and flew into the city of Tbilisi. Tbilisi is a city of about 2.3 million people. Out of the country is about 4 or 5 million people. So a lot of the people are right in the city of Tbilisi. As we got into the airport, it was quite interesting as well, really quite a new airport. We started to, we went toward the place that we were, the conference or the seminar that I was holding was going to be held. And as we were kind of going along the highway, all of a sudden I looked up and it was pointed to me. And they said, there's a fortress built, and there's a church part of that fortress, and that fortress was built in the 6th century. 1,400 years old, just a little older than this church. A few years older. As we were driving along, I looked up there as well, and it was just really quite an incredible place. Well, at the end of the conference, or the seminar, I was able to go and visit that fortress and that church. And so we looked through it, and it was really quite an incredible place. We looked at the place where they, and this was an Orthodox church, looked at a place where they sacrificed the lambs and things like that. But then as we were up on this hill, and it was kind of at a crossroads. It's kind of like the forks, I guess that's how we could say. So the valley's running this way over here. The valley's running this way over here. Over here is going toward Tbilisi. And so this fortress is here. So they could see what was coming over here and what was coming over here. And then there was also some, the part of the city was also down here. And then they pointed out to me and said, there's a church down there that's built in the 4th century. 1,600 years old. As we were talking, and it was kind of during the week as well, we began to talk about how this area of the world was evangelized. And the answer that came to me was the Apostle Andrew and the 12th Apostle. Who is the 12th Apostle? Matthias. Yeah, exactly. Andrew and Matthias were the ones who evangelized that area, as well as going right up into Ukraine. Now, I want to speak this morning on the Apostle Andrew. You ever heard a sermon on the Apostle Andrew? Oh, you're going to hear one this morning. Two weeks ago, I talked to you about how the angel Gabriel appeared to Mary. And he called her, invited her, actually told her that she would be involved in the first advent. Well, 30 years later, Jesus comes to Andrew and says, follow me. And Andrew gets involved. Some years ago, There was a TV program called Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. I didn't really watch. I guess it was kind of a forerunner to the reality show these days. But anyway, what the program was about was rich and famous people, what types of homes they lived in, where they would eat, where they would take their vacations, the places, vehicles they drove, and all this kind of stuff. It was interesting that I was involved in this. It was about 25 years ago. I was involved in youth work in my home church just outside of Steinbeck. And one of the young people came into church one day, and on his T-shirt were these words, "Lifestyles of the Poor and Unknown." Lifestyles of the Poor and Unknown. Well, that's probably Andrew as we look at him this morning. And we haven't really, at least in my studies, haven't really heard that much about him, but there's really something that we can learn from him as we look at his characteristics and some of those things this morning. And so as we look at Andrew's story, and as Paul Harvey used to say, and that's the rest of the story, you'll hear it this morning, of Andrew. And as we look at Andrew, we can understand with greater clarity how God uses ordinary people like you and me. Let's look at just some very basic information about Andrew. Who was his family? As a Mennonite, you want to know who his family is. You know, you might be related to them. Some years ago, I went to, my mother is a Rempel, and went to this Rempel gathering in Steinbeck, and I just wanted to know who I'm related to. And it was quite interesting who I saw there, I guess we must be second or third or fourth cousins. Anyway, there's no mention of Andrew's parents in the Gospels, but from historical records, his parents were Jonas or John and Joanna. That's all we know about them. But what we do know about Andrew's family is he had a brother. Who was his brother? Peter. And all the Gospels, like, how would you like to be introduced as such and such and brother of? And that's how Andrew is introduced all the time. Andrew, the brother of Peter. All four Gospels record this. Now, how much like Andrew was, or like Peter was Andrew, we don't know. Was he brash and outspoken and bold like Peter? You know, spoke before he should have? We don't know that. We do know that Andrew was his brother. Secondly, what occupation did Andrew have? Well, Andrew was a fisherman. Only Matthew and Mark record this. We're not going to look at these verses here because we're going to get into some verses in just a little bit. But we know that he was a fisherman, and I was also thinking about that here in growing up in the prairies. I've grown up in Manitoba, born in McGregor, moved to Saskatchewan, Swift Current area, and then also lived in Alberta. You know, fishermen isn't the occupation of the prairies, except maybe, I guess, in Lake Winnipeg, there are some professional fishermen. So, but anyway, his occupation was that he fished for a living, a worthy occupation, and that one that required a lot of hard work. Also one that at times was dangerous. Remember the story of Jesus being, and it's recorded in Mark chapter 4. Jesus gets on the boat with his disciples, and they go across the lake, and what happens? There's a storm, a severe storm. So I guess as a fisherman, there might be some dangers involved there as well. Thirdly, we know that Andrew lived in the town of Bethsaida. Now, Bethsaida, it's recorded here in John chapter 1. We'll look at that in just a little bit. Bethsaida is on the northeast tip of the Sea of Galilee. And if you have your Bibles, if you have maps at the back there, like I do here, you might see that. Well, we won't go there. It's on the northeast tip of the Sea of Galilee. And it would make sense that he would live there because he was a fisherman, and he would be able to just go right onto the lake there, or the sea there. And it also says, though, in Mark, that Andrew and Peter had a house in Capernaum as well. And Capernaum is more on the north west point or tip of the Sea of Galilee. So he lived right on the sea then. We also know that Andrew was a disciple of John the Baptist. This is recorded for us right here in John as the scripture was read. He was also one of the original 12 apostles, and many believe that he was the first apostle. And that's recorded in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. But here's another interesting point, and then we'll get into the lessons that we can learn from Andrew. He is considered the patron saint of Scotland. Scotland. Anybody been to Scotland? Someday. Because I'll tell you why I want to go there. One of the reasons. Several centuries after the death of Andrew, some of his relics were brought by a missionary named Rule to Scotland, to a place known then as Fife, but now it is known as St. Andrews. It's the site of a world-famous golf course. Golf course and club. A little more famous than the Morden golf course. Someday I want to golf there. We had tee off time booked, but we got rained out. So we'll do it another time. In fact, so he is known as the patron or national saint of Scotland. In fact, November 30th, just a little over a month ago, is remembered as St. Andrew's feast day. But just a side note, he is also considered the patron of both Byzantium and Russia because of his missionary activities in those countries. And that makes sense, as I was telling you, in the countries of Georgia and Ukraine and all those countries there. Okay, let's get into the meat of the message. What are some of the lessons that we can learn from Andrew? First of all, this is the first lesson we can learn from him. His obedience to the call of God on his life. That's the first lesson we can learn. Let's turn back to Matthew chapter 4. Matthew chapter 4 and verses 18 through 20. Matthew 4 and verses 18 through 20. Matthew 4 and verses 18 through 20. As Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon called Peter, and his brother Andrew. They were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. "Come, follow me," Jesus said, "and I will make you fishers of men." At once they left their nets and followed him. Now, Matthew just records the condensed version of how God or how Jesus called Andrew and Peter to follow him. John expands a little bit on it, and that's why John's account is just a little bit different. But it's the same emphasis. So here we see, as we look at these verses, verse 19: "Come, follow me," Jesus said, "and I will make you fishers of men." And then verse 20. Notice the words: "At once." Or other translators have translated this immediately. Immediately. Jesus called Andrew to follow him, and he did it. No questions asked. He is, as I was saying before, he's considered to be the first of the apostles to follow Jesus. Now, there's also the word here, follow, which has several meanings. First of all, in a general sense, it means to follow or to walk behind or down the path after a person. Secondly, a more specific sense of following means to follow as a disciple, to commit oneself to Jesus. And Andrew did this. Now let's consider the ramifications for a moment. Andrew has a somewhat secure job, fishing, maybe a little bit like farming, grain farming or something like that. Somewhat secure job. And Andrew and his brother Peter and possibly James and John were all partners in a fishing business prior to being called by Jesus to follow him. Jesus asks Andrew to leave all of that behind and to follow him as a disciple. God calls us to follow him. It might mean that we leave a life of security and certainty for one of insecurity and uncertainty. Andrew did this, as many others have done as well. So we see the first thing that we can learn from Andrew is his obedience to the call of God on his life. But secondly, and this is what the writer John brings out, his commitment in bringing individual people to Jesus. Like most, as I was saying before, most references to Andrew in the New Testament simply refer to him as Andrew, the brother of Peter. Well, in the book of John, he appears acting as an individual three times, and we're going to look at those three instances. But just before we do, as I said 2 weeks ago, each one of the gospel writers has kind of a different emphasis in writing the gospel. The four gospels are all about the life of Jesus. Matthew's gospel is written to the Jews. Mark talks about the suffering Christ, their suffering servant. Luke talks about God's plan, which includes the Gentiles. Well, John is a book about Jesus becoming one of us. Jesus becoming flesh. Notice what it says in verse 14, John 1:14. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. And so as John is looking at this, as he is giving us the story of Jesus and how Jesus became flesh and became one of us, and how his salvation, in John 3:16, we're familiar with that verse, how his salvation is for all. That's John's emphasis. So let's look at these accounts of Andrew and how he is bringing people to Jesus. We looked at the first account, and let's look back at John chapter 1 and verse 40, and we'll just read a few verses there just to remind ourselves, and then we'll look at several other passages. Verse 40, John chapter 1 and verse 40. Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, was one of the two who heard what John had said and who had followed Jesus. The first thing Andrew did was to find his brother Simon, or Peter, and tell him, "We have found the Messiah, that is the Christ." And what did he do then? He brought him to Jesus. He brought him to Jesus. Let's look at another one. You'll be a little surprised at this one. You're familiar with this story. John chapter 6. John chapter 6 and verses 1 through 8. John chapter 6 and verses 1 through 8. I'm kind of keeping an eye on my time here. I don't know. New Year's Day, what time do you get out? Okay. I don't want to start the year off bad. John chapter 6. John chapter 6 and verses 1 through 8. Sometime after this, Jesus crossed to the far shore of the Sea of Galilee, that is the Sea of Tiberias. And a great crowd of people followed him because they saw the miraculous signs he had performed on the sick. Then Jesus went up on a mountainside and sat down with his disciples. The Jewish Passover feast was near. When Jesus looked up and saw a great crowd coming toward him, he said to Philip, "Where shall we buy bread for these people to eat?" He asked this only to test him, for he already had in mind what he was going to do. Philip answered him, "8 months' wages would not buy enough bread for each one to have a bite." Verse 8, another of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, there's that again, spoke up and said, "Here is a boy with 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish, but how far will they go among so many?" So John takes the time to specifically say that it was Andrew who had made the people aware, or Jesus aware, that this little boy was here, and maybe Jesus could do something with that. Now, I want to be careful. We don't read too much into the story. But John is very intentional in these accounts of how Andrew is bringing people to Jesus. Let's look at another one. John chapter 12. John chapter 12 and verses 20 through 22. John chapter 12 and verses 20 through 22. Now there were some Greeks among those who went up to worship at the feast. They came to Philip, who was from Bethsaida in Galilee, same place where Andrew and Peter were from, with a request. "Sir," they said, "we would like to see Jesus." Philip went to tell Andrew. Andrew and Philip, in turn, told Jesus. Let's just look at those three passages again. With Peter, Andrew went to look for him. He specifically went to find him with the idea of bringing him to Jesus. Why? Because Andrew believed that Jesus was the Messiah. It was important news. One commentator says this act of Andrew is as great a service to the church as ever any man did. The second instance is the boy with the 5 loaves and 2 fish who Andrew brought to Jesus. Why? We're not sure. This boy had some food. Perhaps Andrew thought that Jesus could do something with this food. We're not sure. In any case, he brought, or at least he made the people aware of this little boy and his food. The third instance is where Andrew and Philip bring some Greeks to Jesus, Greeks who wanted to meet Jesus himself. Each time we meet Andrew in this gospel, he is bringing someone to Jesus, a consistency that is worth noting. And only John records this. In the Episcopal Church, the Fellowship of Saint Andrew is devoted to encouraging personal evangelism and the bringing of one's friends and colleagues to a knowledge of the gospel of Christ. It is the nature of Christian experience that those who enjoy it want to share it with others. We might think that because we cannot talk to large groups of people, we can't have much influence. But Andrew brought only a few to Jesus. He made a difference, and we can make a difference, even though it is only one by one. It's said that the Apostle Peter became the fisher of people en masse, whereas Andrew was the fisher of people as individually. Both are needed and necessary. An old man walking down the beach at dawn noticed a young man ahead of him picking up starfish and flinging them into the sea. Catching up with the youth, he asked, "Well, what are you doing?" The answer was that the stranded starfish would die if left until the morning sun. "But the beach goes on for miles, and there are millions of starfish," countered the elderly man. "How can your effort make any difference?" The young man looked at the starfish in his hand and then threw it into the safety of the waves and said, "It makes a difference to this one. It makes a difference to this one." Well, we can learn something from Andrew in his commitment in bringing individuals to Jesus. But thirdly, we also see the other last lesson we can learn from Andrew is his commitment to following Jesus to the end. Andrew was with Jesus to the end, at the Mount of Olives, at his ascension. Turn with me to Acts chapter 1. Acts chapter 1 and verses 9 through 13. Acts 1 and verses 9 through 13. After he said this, Jesus, he was taken up before their very eyes, and a cloud hid him from their sight. They were looking intently up into the sky as he was going, when suddenly 2 men dressed in white stood beside them. "Men of Galilee, they said, "why do you stand here looking into the sky? This same Jesus who has been taken from you into heaven will come back in the same way you have seen him go into heaven." Then they returned to Jerusalem from the hill called the Mount of Olives, a Sabbath day's walk from the city. When they arrived, they went upstairs to the room where they were staying. Those present were Peter, John, James and Andrew. There were more. But you know what? That's the last time Andrew's name is mentioned in the Bible. So what happened? Well, historians help us with that. Historians like Origen and others. It's believed that Andrew went to the foothills of the Caucasus Mountains, which is borders Georgia, which is present-day Georgia. He preached to the Scythians as far as the Caspian Sea. He also went to Byzantium, which is present-day Turkey, and then went to Greece. It was here that he was martyred during the reign of Nero under the governor of Patras. It's believed that he was crucified and bound, not nailed to the cross, so that his suffering would be prolonged. He hung on the cross for 3 days in dreadful pain, but continued to tell people around him of the love of God. God uses ordinary people like you and me to do his work. The more obscure Andrew is often described in terms of his relationship to his famous brother. But that's all right, because God was using Andrew to do great things as well. Let me conclude with this illustration. Everyone knows of Isaac Newton. Who is Isaac Newton? You've heard the name, right? His famed encounter with a falling apple. Newton discovered and introduced the laws of gravity in the 1600s, which revolutionized astronomical studies. But few knew or know that if it weren't for a fellow named Edmund Halley, the world might never have learned from Newton. It was Halley who challenged Newton to think about his original notions. Halley corrected Newton's mathematical errors and prepared geometrical figures to support his discoveries. Halley coaxed the hesitant Newton to write his great work, Mathematical Principles of Natural Philosophy. Not a book that I've read recently. Halley edited and supervised the publication and actually financed its printing, even though Newton was wealthier and easily could have afforded the printing costs. Historians call it one of the most selfless examples in the annals of science. Newton began almost immediately to reap the rewards of prominence, while Halley received little credit. But Halley did use the principles to predict the orbit and return of the comet. You've heard of Halley's Comet, anybody? Halley's Comet, and he only received any recognition for it after his death. And because the comet only returns every, how many years? 76 years. The notice is rather infrequent. Halley remained a devoted scientist who didn't care who received the credit as long as the cause was being advanced. Others have played Halley's role. John the Baptist said of Jesus, "He must become greater, I must become less." Barnabas was content to introduce others to greatness. Many pray to uphold the work of one Christian leader. Such selflessness advances the kingdom. So we have Andrew to thank this morning for his enthusiasm for bringing people to Jesus, even though some of the people, like Peter, will be remembered more than Andrew. Amen.